Gentlemen, madams, and messieurs, welcome to At the End of the Day, the show where I play with my mustache constantly, apparently.
Perfect.
This week we...
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I'm a fidgety little fucker. I don't know why. Today we have Don the Workman, Don the Pleb Workman. Yes.
Yep.
On to talk about a few things. Civilizational, of course. Don, before we get into the meat and potatoes of everything, it's a weird thing sometimes with X, because of the time difference too. I think being in Australia, sometimes I see things before I go to bed, and then they've like, which is like in the morning over on the East Coast. And then by the time I wake up, things have like moved along quite a bit. So right now there's this whole like DR versus shit libs, talking about Starship Troopers. The movie and the book, but mostly the movie. And there's like people are writing like synopsis. There are people writing like Harvard papers on this right now. It's just weird. Like, I guess this is coming down to when leftoids say media literacy. What they mean is applying a leftist lens to everything. You miss the point by idolizing them. Anyways, so talking about Starship Troopers, a movie, and of course, Paul Verhoeven, the director, made the choice of making the humans look a lot more fascistic in terms of military terms, fighting, you know, killer space bugs that were trying to destroy them, and try to create some sort of moralizing, I don't know, tale about this. Don, you're my military expert. We have on the show quite often to talk about these things. What's your thoughts about space bugs, sir? And from a Marine's perspective?
I mean, look, I was an artilleryman to begin with. If you're going to hoard that much stuff together, there's fire for effect. All right. Just start killing. Don't stop killing. I have seen very little of this, and I think it would be fair to say at this point, intentionally so. DR goes progressively off the rails, in my opinion, and they have been for years now. The less I pay attention to what they're doing. On the other hand, there's some brilliant idea amongst, let's call them intellectuals, that the way the military works is some greater commentary on society. For clarity's sake, this massively fascistic movie is made most famous by quoting a Marine. And I'm not kidding.
What was the quote?
You sons of bitches, you want to live forever? That was said by Gunnery Sergeant Dan Daly in World War One. Right. So, I don't, apparently the Marine Corps fascism, I guess. And to be fair, it's current year, so everything is fascism. And I should probably just accept that. Okay. Yeah. If that's the game we want to play today, we want to discuss how, you know, service guarantee citizenship means fascism, then fine. On the other hand, you know, dear everybody who is very excited about this movie is, if you paid any, and the book is even worse, for any of your arguments, you know, if you want to pay any attention to what's really going on, it's going to tell all of you that you're retarded, right? Because dear my monarchists, we still have a voting society, right? You just got to shoot somebody in the face first, right? Which, by the way, none of you are going to do. So guess what? I get to vote and you don't. All right. Now, moving along from there, having a limited franchise is self-evidently not fascistic. I don't know how else to say that. There are 8 million ways and times and places that the franchise in voting civilizations has been limited, and basically none of them were fascism. So I guess if the whole point of this is to go full retard, congratulations, everyone. You are successful. Mission accomplished. You know, get your banner and George Bush to stand in front of it. Well played.
Yeah, I think so. This the fascinating thing about this whole thing, whether you were talking about the book or the movie, apparently in this thing that I'm kind of half reading. I really don't want to be infected by this stupidity. You know, I only have so much bandwidth left in my brain at 46 yep. years old with a toddler and like doing the show and working full time and doing all this other stuff. It's like, dude, I got this much free space.
and it ain't for like, this.
Man, my tabs are wide open. So it's like I gotta cut down on the noise, right? My guilty pleasure is still pro wrestling because it's one thing where I can watch and I don't care. Like it's like this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I hate it when real life stuff creeps in. Like the whole yeah. Vince McMahon crap. I'm like, oh no, please. Oh no.
Let's go back yeah. to throwing chairs at people.
Please just that was throw someone through a chair. This can be resolved in this world very easily. Like right. put them in a cage match, throw them off a cage, that'd be fine. But so apparently Hyneman was originally motivated to write Starship Troopers by his objections to the partial nuclear test ban treaty, which he viewed as an acquiescence on the part of the U.S. What do you think of that? Besides the point, Hyneman simply viewed it as a matter of a will to survive. So, yeah, there's a few things that Hyneman kind of was pointing out. And I think I've actually used some of his ideas of like citizenship versus civilian. I would put in different terms, but basically the effect is the same, where it's like, look, you got to give something to get something.
Yeah.
This idea of just simply getting all the goods from civilization by simply existing is retarded. And it's certainly what I think a lot of leftists, I think that's the major objection. You take that thing out of the story and it just becomes aliens. You know, Marines sent to kill alien right. bugs that are killing people. Like that's essentially the story. There's no moral efficacy right. necessary after that point.
I mean, there's very few moralistic moments in either the book or the movie. And one of them is, you know, there's a guy getting ripped in half by a bug in both the book and the movie. And Razchak shoots him. And it says, I'd expect any of you to do the same for me. Right. You know, this is the morals of what we're doing. And that's mm-hmm. as close as you get to heavy moralizing in the whole story. Other than that, you know, everybody's super focused on the classroom at the beginning. Okay. But that's again, the idea that you have to contribute before you get the Gibbs, which is effectively what this comes down to, right? You know, limited franchise in any fashion, generally comes down to that. And I would argue the times where people don't think it comes down to that, it still comes down to that, just not in the dynamic that you like.
Yeah. I mean, look, even in the West and even the liberal West, we have had this before in terms of not being formalized, but an informal association. Like there was a time, crazy as I know as it sounds, that the troops were considered heroes, and people coming back from World War II definitely were given preferential treatment and had a more of a hierarchical stance, even if they weren't rich or coming from an elite structure or something like that. It's not that they, you know, service used to be almost required for being the president of the United freaking States. Like you know, if you didn't serve at all or chucked out, I mean, remember when George W. Bush, it was kind of like revealed that he was draft dodging or getting out of service, or he was there, but he was a schmuck. I can't remember what the thing was.
Whether or not being in the National Guard was actually service is what that debate came
right. down to. Yeah, yeah. So, but at least he served.
Yeah.
Like, and you get to Obama and it's like, well, I guess that criteria is out the window now.
Well, you know, and Clinton, him either. Sure. I mean, basically from the 60s forward, I want to say service no longer was of particular relevance. Though, I mean, to some degree or another, all that does is provide nitpicking, right? And If you're not a vet, you probably don't see the nitpicking. But if you are, make no mistake. Last night, as I went to bed, there was a guy that's getting dragged on X because he claimed that he cleared 400 rooms and took down four high value targets as a supply guy in the Iraqi war, which unto itself is not a term that GWAT vets use. Right. And so, you know, that now we start with the like, okay, there's a chink in the armor. Where do we go from here? What is the vector of attack? And the next thing this guy says is he's part of Operation Desert Spring. Right now, you've probably never heard of Operation Desert Spring because nobody's heard of Operation Desert Spring. Right. And the reason nobody's heard of Operation Desert Spring is because when Desert Storm kicked off, we did Desert Storm, then we did Desert Shield. Right. And as that wound down into a peacetime mission, it became build a base in Kuwait. Right. Mm-hmm. The building of that base in Kuwait was called Operation Desert Spring, which is why nobody's ever heard of it, right? Because it doesn't matter, right? On the other hand, when you tell me you were a part of Operation Desert Spring, you know what I know you didn't do? Clear 400 rooms, right? You didn't kick 400 doors. That did not happen.
Maybe he misspoke. Wait, maybe he misspoke. Maybe he said he cleaned. He cleaned 400 rooms.
Right,
and actually, exactly. He got in there with a vacuum and got, right? You know, got
mop, bucket. Mop.
Exactly. Yeah. That's service, Dom. Come on.
And here's the thing, is that generally speaking, the vet world will, you know, hey, you joined, right? The problem, and it's the same problem that happened early on with Miss Milky's there, right? I am a combat veteran. Are you? What does that mean? Right. Because during all the time that you have been in the military, women have not been kicking doors and shooting people. Right.
Dom's referencing Tulsi Gabbard, by the way, was her affectionate term is Milky's.
Yes. And so sure enough, you know, you go look up her service record, and she sat on a relatively peaceful base and did medic things, which look is not, you know, a dishonorable job. Right. It is important. It is a thing that is necessary. But when you come to me and you say, I'm a combat veteran, right? What I think is that, you know, presumably you got shot at minimum, and not like, okay, there's a base here. You happen to be on it and somebody lobbed a mortar at it. Right. And this is the thing, is this is what happens. And it's not for particularly nefarious reasons, right? People who are in politics want to embellish their resume a little. I don't blame them, right? Everybody's doing it. You better get in on the game. But when you go talk to this group of people, right, we all tend to take this sort of thing personally. And so, you know, there's a story going around about George H.W. Bush Sr., where he gets shot down and, you know, sharks and all kinds of stuff. And it's true, right? You can go watch all the mystery podcasts talk about it. They've all done something on it. And if that is the guy who was running with military experience 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, right? And you show up and you go, I was in the National Guard. We're not on the same playing field here. Right. Mm-hmm. I got shot down in the Pacific laying siege to the Japanese. That you're not the same guy. And I get it for the civilian populace. Nobody even asks. Right. But what you end up with is every vet in the world going like, yeah, I mean, I guess technically he did, except for that he was a giant faggot. Right.
Right.
So
well, it's why you it's like you why you wouldn't want to put Rambo in MASH, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't confuse the two things. MASH is fine, totally fine. I know, different war, but whatever.
Whatever.
They never made a big deal of it, so why should we? It was an obvious analogy to Vietnam. But the two finally good shows, like, or, you know, perspectives. But there are two different things, and they shouldn't be confused with one another, especially when you start to infer things, like military being highly competent, you know, cool under fire, can take a lot of stress, is going to be able to speak to other military men, be able to conduct, let's say, you know, two giant wars at the same time. I mean, it'd be nice to have someone semi-competent in the military in America right now, just for us to make us feel like a little bit more, less unease. Or when you have like the current guy who goes away and has surgery and doesn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Has to like drop a memo, like, oops, my bad. So yeah, right. Wait, who's running everything? Oh, the second command. Oh, she didn't even know that this was going on. And then you find, and then you see interviews with her and like, wait, she was running
things. Oh shit.
I think she still is. I'm not sure what's going on with that.
Well, you know, Austin's still just gone somewhere. So, but this is the thing, right? Cause this is why vets get touchy about it. Right. Cause one, if you have done combat things, you have met the guy. That, you know, the first round broke out and you couldn't find it for an hour. Right. And when you did find him, he was under a Humvee digging a hole. He was sitting in, right. And you're like, I mean, in the most technical sense, that guy's a combat veteran. Fuck. Right. But the flip side of that is the guys who never went and never did. And again, one of you is going to be those people. None of us hold this against you as long as you're not claiming to have it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's for the same reason that, you know, everybody says, but you didn't do this thing. Shut the fuck up. Because I don't care, you know, how many training ops you went on, this, that, and the other. It is different when someone is trying to kill you. And so as good as it might be, even if we were just going to say it has to be combat veterans, one, you want to talk about how we get in perpetual wars. That's how we get in perpetual wars, right? Because the next generation of leadership's got to come from somewhere, right? But two, you know, that you were in the military it means very different things to very different people. You know, even when it's peacetime, the combat MOSs are still out there knee deep in the mud, you know, 5 to 7 days a week. Doing whatever training they're doing, and the admin guy is sitting in an air-conditioned office filling out paperwork, right? That's peacetime, and it's two horrifically different things, right? But you know, the flip side of that is Dan Crenshaw's, right? Okay, be a Navy SEAL. I don't want that guy in charge of my dog, right? So
yeah, I think that's the other thing too, is that it's not like it automatically says that you're going to be good at politics or anything else except for maybe military matters. And it doesn't even mean that you are good doing that. I mean, you know, I'm not going to do a loss of the eye joke because it's just by this point it's getting tasteless. But who was the other guy who passed away that the libertarians love to hate? Whose daughter is a
McCain.
There's another great example, right, of someone who served in the military, was a war hero. I don't know if you want to rebut that at all, but like, comes back and, you know, his policies are let's say deteriorate to to the American state. It happens, you know.
We can rip McCain as much as you like. I think Razor Fist has the most succinct ripping of McCain that there is. If you haven't seen the Razor Fist John McCain video, watch it. Mm. It will change very quickly your view of what kind of war hero he is. He served, he got shot down, he was a POW. These things are all true. What he did as a POW is not particularly great. And so, this pedantry aside, and it kind of is, right? Understand that this is vet pedantry. It's only us that engage in this, and Razor Fist, evidently. But this kind of pedantry aside, the moment that you give political currency for a thing, the people who want political currency will make that thing easy to attain, right? So if you're going to talk about, Smedley Butler was a great leader, right? Which, you know, most of the internet is familiar with at this point because of War is a Racket. And look, otherwise, Smedley Butler was a great leader. He was a great combat leader. You know, one of his medals of honor is for a group of guys getting pinned down and him just by snipers and him just walking down an alleyway full of snipers pointing, going, shoot that guy, right? And otherwise, an entire mission getting ground to a halt. Now, I personally cannot imagine leadership who would be willing to put their own lives at that much risk for the sake of accomplishing a mission. They generally just put it on me and go like, well, I don't know, you can die, fuck it, right? And so even that transition, right? The expectation of Smedley Butler was to accomplish the mission at basically whatever cost. And now the expectation is to accomplish the mission at the cost of the enlisted as often as not. And I don't know, one of you high speed, low drag operator types is going to be like, I had officers that would do that. And that great for you. Soft didn't exist at the time that Smedley Butler was doing this. He probably would have been in it if it did, but it didn't. This was the expectation of the military, and it no longer is, right? And, you know, this escalation goes all the way up the chain.
Yeah, I think once you start getting this, I've just, I will start transitioning into the civil stuff, or maybe I talk a little bit Ukraine-Russia before we get there, vis-a-vis. We'll go on a little international trip here. Because I think once you start getting this rot, what I've said about the civil versus primal frame is civil people, let's say people who exist in a civil frame, are interested in creating civilization, or maintaining it at least. And their mentality that breeds a certain mentality and a certain reality that excludes other things. And part of that is there's sacrifice built into that. There's an idea that, hey, these things are bigger than me and more important than me. So I need to sometimes sacrifice or put my life or livelihood or comfort or whatever else on the time, attention, whatever I'm valuing at the moment on the line, give up a little bit of it or risk it in order to keep this thing going, because this thing is important to my family, to my kids, to my grandkids, to my whole lineage. Like, you have an idea of this thing stretching forward in time. A primalist is right here. It's everything's immediate, you know? Every threat is existential. If you're thinking about it in terms of, like, you know, a video game, a civilizationalist has a really long life bar, whereas a primalist has a very short one. And now these two things aren't good or bad. They're just is. The primal frame can be really useful if, like, you take us and put us on a desert island suddenly, or out in the middle of a jungle, we get primal real damn fast, because, you know, that rustling in the bush could very well be a tiger. And you make a mistake and you're dead. Where in a well-run civilization, you're not so worried about all those things. You can take a little time and think about it. You can consider your options or, you know, possible consequences of your actions. When you start to introduce that primal frame into civilization, it will destroy a civilization over time, because it puts this anxiety into it, and this sort of idea of, like, I don't care, I'm just here, give me, give me, give me. The selfishness begins to erode the I would say the functional principles of a civilization. And because it requires you to do things that aren't, let's say, super, they're not rational in some ways, they're super rational, and we'll get, sure, you know, you can see that in architecture. Yeah, it makes people start living in this really weird reality. And you see this in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, where finally people are finally coming around to what we've been saying, I've been saying, you've been saying, a whole bunch of people have been saying since the very start. Yeah, of course Ukraine's going to lose. Yeah. Their win condition was stupid. It was impossible. Well, what are you going to do? You know, so let's see what you can do.
So that's a problem of conflicting incentives, right? Ukraine in general. And we know this because 6 months or something after the invasion, they were sitting down at a negotiating table and everything was all hammered out and this, that, and the other. And basically Boris Johnson said, showed up and said, take all that paperwork and throw it out the window. And now the war's still going, right? Mm-hmm. And you can think childishly, and I do mean childishly, if you want, that, well, you know, but they should have fought for this, that, and the other. Okay. You know, there comes a point when you have so much gangrene that you cut off fingers, toes, limbs, whole limbs have got to go to save the body. And just hanging on to that gangrene does not make you win, right? Eventually, it makes you die. And look, and for those of you who are on the other side of that discussion, Russia's right about everything. I don't give a fuck. Right, fine. Russia's right about everything. How dare you compare them to gangrene? Well, look, from the perspective of Ukraine, there is this fucking monster eating your ass right over there, right? And hey, you know what? It turns out I don't need my left leg that much. I'd rather live. It can chew on the left leg, and I'll be over here. And no small part of the problem in traditional internet fashion with discussing this war at all, or really any other subject, is that the most extreme partisan hippie sports team bullshit is what is ruling the conversation here. And it doesn't matter what is survivable, what is accomplishable, what actually can be done that will come to a positive outcome. Because if any of that mattered, this war would be over, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Zelensky would have shown up back when he had Russia at the negotiating table and said, okay, what is it that we have to be doing here? Because I don't want to force feed the entirety of my male population into a meat grinder. And that would have been that. And again, oh, I like to root for the underdog. Okay. Root for the underdog. Root away. On the other hand, at some point, you actually have to examine what's going on the ground. And we're not going to do it, right? We're going to pretend in the same fashion that we, since at least Vietnam, if not Korea, we're going to pretend like more technology just means wars are won. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Once again, that is not happening. There are other dynamics to war than technology. I don't know how else to tell you that. It's just facially true. But if you got past that point, you'd go, maybe it doesn't matter how much Excalibur we send to Ukraine. They just can't win. And for all the rest of us that have been there since the beginning going, maybe if there's going to be anything of Ukraine left, okay, fine. We jam all the technology in the world that we can in 60 days. And we tell Russia straight from the jump, look, you want our Vietnam? Because we could turn this into Vietnam for you. Or we all sit down at the negotiating table right now and we figure out how this ends. Now, the problem with that, of course, would be that the United States sparked a lot of this bullshit. And so, so much for global peacekeeping and all that kind of shit. You know, we very much had got hand in the cookie jar here. And so clearly that can't be the goal. Well, what does that leave on the table? Well, males 13 to 103 in Ukraine are going to fucking die.
Do you see that video that was out there for a bit? And people, of course, paid all the wrong attention to it. There was a Down syndrome kid on the Ukrainian front, or he's a mortar. He's being used to bring mortar ammunition to a guy, and they were, you know, beating him up and making him, you know, feel retarded because, you know, Downsy. But everyone was thinking, they were talking about the treatment this kid was receiving. Like, look, there's a Down syndrome kid on your front line in your artillery. Now, Dom, your specialty was artillery. Be any Downsy kids in your military? Look, if you had seen a Downsy kid while you're engaged in a military operation, what would your thought have been at that point?
Unironically, one ran into my unit I forget the road, but in Helmand Province, came upon us, and basically the Taliban chalked him full of oranges. So it looked like he was wearing a suicide vest, and he kept walking up on a bunch of Marines while looking like he was wearing a suicide vest. He got shot. That is what happened. There's no debate about it, at least that portion. Lots of people debate lots of other things about it all you want. You can tell me that, civilian casualties. Hey, look, retards in wars get killed. All right.
It's sad, but it's true. But at least in your example right there, the Taliban were using him as a decoy, not as an active war participant. Like, granted, in the video, the guys just bring a mortar shell to the artillery guy. It's not like he was, you know, on the front lines with a gun, but he might as, I mean, maybe he was in about half an hour after that. Well, you know, when Avdiivka is falling all around their ears. Yeah. That's the other thing, too. I've been seeing these reports where I think it's Azov. It was saying something like, the intensity of the Russian shelling was almost, it was unfair. I'm like, what?
Yes. Look, you fucking morons.
That's asymmetrical the point. Warfare. Asymmetrical warfare is asymmetrical. You dipshit.
I mean, look, man, they don't call it the king of battle for nothing. Hey, there's lots of you over there. I don't want to deal with lots of you. Hold this. All right.
Let me just see if I can find it here.
what a bunch of assholes.
I don't know if I saved that exact one.
Oh, man, that's funny.
But there was one report where I was reading where I think they've, because it's the Russians have been really specializing in aerial bombs. And I think they dropped some like 20 DAPs in the span of like, I don't know, a couple hours, right? Just like carpet bombing these people. Yeah. And they were saying, like, some of the guys on the, some of the Ukrainian forces on the ground were saying it's really brutal because you have the explosions, obviously, but he's like, there's concussive
effects. Yeah.
So it's just knocking guys. If you don't get blown up, you get knocked out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what the Russians have been doing. And it's like, yeah,
that's because the point.
Before this war started, they had the second most largest and powerful military in the world. Now, okay, great. Number two, ha ha ha, not number one, but number two is still pretty good.
Okay.
Like, so all things considered. And the win condition for the Ukrainians was to force Russia out of Crimea, all the occupied territories, and I guess back into Russian Federation. I guess they were going to storm Moscow. Like,
oh, there was a while.
Do you think they just don't stop? Like, right. Like,
well, so there's a thing that has happened that the U.S. has created this problem in its entirety. Right. So the U.S. military, however much the internet likes to mock the dog shit out of it today, right? The U.S. military is in every imaginable dimension larger than basically any military that has ever walked the earth. It's more powerful. It's more ridiculous. It's more over the top. And it has been so probably at least since World War I. And again, I can see the comments already. Ah, tranny's this, jerk off that. That's fine. Prior to the U.S. military being what it is today and has been for about the last century, Russia's military would have been the biggest military on earth. And nobody else was dedicating that much comparatively of society to their military as we are and or were. But what about, you know, this tribe that used bow and arrows where every male was a part of the military? Okay. All well and good. Fine. You know, Genghis Khan, you got me, I guess. On the other hand, they were not dedicating, you know, Genghis Khan was not coming out with the brand new, triple repeating crossbow or whatever, right? The war development on weapons didn't exist, right?
Probably since the Romans, really. Like, that's an important distinction is that, again, this is what comes into the framing issue. It's a mentality. Like, I'm saying it's a civ, when we're using it with civilizational capital and everything, I'm saying there's a grind set here. Mm-hmm. That differentiates you from other people. And the grind set is not just we have a big military with a lot of things that go boom. It's that we have a lot. We have a big military with things that go boom, and we know how to use it. And we spend an incredible amount of time perfecting, training, educating, thinking, maintaining, like all of these things go together. Yeah. This is why I've been saying Thomas has been on. Thomas 77 has been on quite a bit and talking about this issue. And we always get pushback whenever I say this. But right now, Russia has essentially the most powerful military in the world because of the experience they have. Like, whenever I hear EU saying we're going to send like Polish troops, and they're like, they would get destroyed. You could send in 1 million people right now and Russia would chew them up. Not because they have more people, not because of their bombs go boom, and because your bombs go boom too. It's that they now have the most experienced, battle-hardened, standing military in the world right now.
Yeah.
That's fought against NATO and won, essentially. So,
I mean, in terms of funding,
if you're relying on technology, yeah, Russia's got you beat. So you got to come up with some sort of tactics that would beat them, or nuke them, or whatever.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, we can't even do that anymore because we don't know how to build the nukes. Oops.
But yeah. Well, so the argument, the way that is going to go, right? Day one. Well, first of all, if you send European troops, Dear Europe, who always gets mad at me if I ever say anything anti-Europe, get your soft pillows out. Make sure you're on the softest chair. Get yourself a drink, right? Thumb nestled squarely in your ass. If you send European troops, they are going to fucking die. And a lot, right? And that is and I know you can't make this kind of commentary on the internet without, oh, so what you're saying is that the British are less than. The only reason the British are less than in this fashion is because they think the NHS is more important than their military. You can argue that all you fucking want. That is factually true. And by the way, your NHS is a fucking disaster too. So yeah. Okay. The SAS and SBS are a bunch of badasses. There's maybe a couple of thousand of them. Those guys are going to go in there and lay it down hard. Wherever they're in there getting work done, work is going to get done. And everybody else is going to fucking die. Okay. And it is for that exact reason, right? You know, straight leg grunt fucking retard who has been on the battlefield for the last 2 fucking years has probably learned a thing or two about not dying. All right. Your military, that your average straight leg grunt probably hasn't done more than shoot a range in the past 50 fucking years, is going to get around to the face, right? Like, because it's the interface that all of you have with this idea. Go watch any of the Vietnam movies, the World War II movies, look at The Replacements, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, we didn't even bother to learn their names because they were gonna die anyway. And those were guys that got put in with guys who had been on the battlefield for 2 years, mm-hmm. 3 years, 5 years, whatever. It's not a coincidence. Battlefield experience friggin' matters. Now, for the moment, the U.S. military has guys with battlefield experience. You can argue all you want about whether or not it's near peer and this, that, and the other, but it turns out battlefield experience just as a premise matters. And so you don't have any. Their straight leg grunts are going to be substantially more dangerous than yours, whether or not you've got superior technology, whether or not you've got, a supply chain that you think is better for some reason because you think Russia parking all of the vehicles they'll need for the whole war on a road means that they don't know what a supply line is, right? I mean, they just turned their supply line into 100 feet, but you think you have a better one. Okay, well, good for you, right? That you can't envision this war in a fashion where, hey, we better take this seriously, unto itself is going to provide Russia a strategic advantage, whether you like it or not.
Well, and I mean, Putin's been able to turn this into an existential war for the Russians as well, very, very effectively. At last check, they have, like, any given month, they have hundreds, if not thousands, of men signing up for military service. Like, they don't have a recruitment problem at all. Like, the rest of the West must be, like, just pissed off and envious of the current Russian recruitment drive, which is like, they don't even have to set up booths. They're like, no, please, we're actually, we're full, we're good.
Yeah, right. I'll see you next month. Right.
Yeah. We don't have enough booths, man. Come back. Right. Like, it's ridiculous. And again, if you actually invaded, if Europe or America or whoever actually started to invade, or threatening to invade Russia, well, now you've just turned into even a more existential war.
Yeah.
And that recruitment thing, that mobilization, Putin wouldn't have to do a draft.
Right. People would be beating guys off with a stick.
Right.
You know?
And willing to go serve and die for their country, which is a hell of a lot different than, okay, what's Britain going to do? Like, yeah. Who are they going to send? Who's signing up? Let's say they force them, because I know there's been rumors that they're going to do a draft.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say you do that. Well, what's the morale? We always hear about this. What's the military morale of your average troop? Guy who was playing CSGO on Wednesday is now, jarheaded up and going to go fight the Russians,
so,
who are angry and pissed off and fighting for their survival. I don't know. I'm betting on the Russians on this one.
I know it's very popular on the internet to talk about draftees being garbage, and that the morale is low and this, that, and the other. But when you talk to the guys, or rather, I've never spoken to any of them, so I should rephrase. When you read the guys who did fighting on the ground at the time with draftees, their view of draftees is not Hollywood's view or the internet's view. The Vietnam War draftees, if you go listen to the New York Times, you will hear that they were demotivated, drug addict fucking losers. Mm-hmm. If you go read David Hackworth, he will tell you that he didn't know who a draftee was because everybody did their job for him. Right. Now, you can, make 50 different arguments from there about what that means. Maybe Hackworth was just such great leadership that it didn't matter if they were draftees, right? Because lots of Hackworth's books is about, him and good leadership versus bad leadership. And maybe that's what it is. It's just good leadership overcame whether or not they were draftees. And maybe that's the case. On the other hand, the United States military for the past century at minimum has had a kind of in case of war, break glass policy about good leadership. No matter which U.S. military leader it is that you've heard of, there is almost 100% chance he was forced out of the military at least once and brought back again for the reason that you heard about it. Now, I can't speak as clearly to European military's leadership on this front. I know the French Foreign Legion gets away with just a ton because the French don't care about them. And so it's, Legion, you guys just figure this out. Right. And so they certainly seem to have might as well hold on to the good leadership because nobody gives a shit about us anyway, kind of mentality. But that sort of cream almost always rises to the top, in the middle of wars. Right. And there are times that it didn't, but almost always that is the case, for any number of reasons, but still happens. And so because of that, okay, are you going to have a load of draftees who are driving trucks who really don't care anyway, who are going to surrender the moment that the Russians find them? Maybe. Is that the whole war? Is that the majority? Probably not. Will this be used to promote that the draft is bad and see these people don't care anyway and we should stop doing draft things? Yes. But this goes back to, was it George Bernard Shaw, I think, said there was a time that Hitler could have been stopped. Or no, I'm sorry. Churchill said there was a time that we could have stopped Hitler with a memo, right? Well, anti-war people are anti-war. Right. And so they're going to use anything in the world that exists to say that, if you do war things, bad things are going to happen. And yeah, okay, sometimes they have a point, but usually they don't. And by the way, I am pretty non-interventionist about most things, but if we're going to discuss the mechanics of war, then it doesn't matter whether or not I think intervention should be happening. This is how war works,
Yeah. I think that's an important part to go to too, is that, you know, we can get out of the morality debate a little bit by simply saying, look, I'm not saying this should or shouldn't happen, but yeah. if it is happening, because I didn't get the call. No one's was like, hey Jay, what do you think?
Yeah.
Tomorrow do we send the polls in? Is that a good, right? Until I get those calls, I'm just sitting here going, well, look, why this is a bad idea is because it's a bad idea. I mean, just one last thing on it before we switch into Rancho Dawn, or whatever you're calling it these days. I've heard a lot of people saying, well, okay, why isn't Russia taking more territory? Like, why isn't this a big advancement happening? I'm like, you have to also remember that they're fighting in Ukraine, and that means that they're fighting in a big giant field.
Yeah.
So the reason why they've only taken certain towns or only moving it after they've whittled down, they've meat grinded out people constantly, and then will move forward until they can seize a whole area, is because otherwise it's like they can go and take that town, you know, but then they're in the middle of a field going, we have the town. Yeah. Look, we have town now. Oh shit. We're in middle fields. Like, oh, so bombs come now.
Okay. So dear Western world, mm-hmm. all of you. Okay. You have won.
I appreciate you think that the show has that big of a reach, John. We're working on it.
High hopes. you have watched the American military engage things on a global stage for the past 100 years, right? You hear things like, you know, we took Iraq in 2 weeks or whatever, right? And you think that for some reason, the only way to fight a war is the way that the American military fights a war, which is amazing, because you same fucking retards come to me and say that Americans lose every war they get into. All right. Well, so presumably somebody has figured out how to fight a war and win, at least according to you, right? Whether you like it or not, the Russians' mentality on how to fight a war for the past, since rifles have been a thing, is actually pretty close, because I'm sure you people have all watched this too, or at least, you know, read the books or whatever, pretty close to the way the Unsullied fight in Game of Thrones, right? Up, carve out some, fortify right behind, carve out some, fortify right behind. They've been doing the same thing for a century. And for some reason, we went, well, it's current year, and the Russians just are not going to fight the same way that they have for the past century. And I took one look at this and went, the Russians are fighting the same way that they have for the past century. They're going to go relatively slowly, right, in the same way that they always have. And every step of the way, they're going to set up fortification lines. And if at any point they get pushback, right, someone pushes into those lines, they're going to make them pay for hitting the lines. And then they're going to just start to fall away. By the way, how'd that spring offensive go? Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you want to know where you could have learned that this is how the Russians were going to fight? Because it's the only piece of history the internet will ever talk about, or anybody else for that matter, World War II, where the Russians went to a town. They fortified the town. As the Germans arrived, they made the Germans pay for entering the town. But what did they do? They just sort of fell away. And they moved back to the next town. And the Germans would show up at the next town, and they made them pay, but they also sort of just fell away, and they drugged their asses all the way back across Russia. And then when the Germans couldn't take it anymore, they punched right back to Germany, right? It's the same war that has been being fought by the Russians for all of recorded history. And for some reason, you people went, oh, they're going to fight like the Americans, but they don't fight like the Americans.
Yeah, the only difference now is they have drones.
Yeah,
that's basically it. It's made it easier.
Yes,
I mean, last time you were on, Don, I think this is the last time you're on. We showed that video. It was pretty stunning of where the Russian experience was getting. And I was asking from an artillery perspective, because there was like three buildings. Memory serves, there was like three buildings, And the Russians were like, I don't even know if it was a practice or if there was an actual target or what. I'm assuming there was a necessity for it. And they were pinpoint striking the middle building until it fell. And I remember asking, like, what's your assessment of that? And they're like, they're fucking good. Like, that's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, no, I remember. They MLRS'd a building in the middle of a city.
Right.
And that's rockets are not that accurate, right? And you know what you don't see in that video? You don't see rockets flying. Well, okay. Before someone gets all, yeah, bad GPS. Okay. Those MLRS systems that the Russians towed around are not GPS guided. They're just fire and forget. You know, it's going roughly here. Those rocket trucks are, they're basically artillery, you know, not in a GPS guided sense, not Excalibur, none of that craziness. It's just up going this way. And those guys landed 100 of those rockets in the middle of a city and didn't hit anything but the target. That, to really appreciate how good that is, you need to know A, that those rockets are relatively inaccurate. I'm not saying you don't know where they're going, but they're relatively inaccurate. And that, you know, there's a thing in indirect fire called intervening crest. And it means basically what you think, right? There's a crest of some kind, a mountain, a building, or whatever. And you need to calculate going over it or around it and not hitting it. In the middle of a city, there's about 200 of those. All right. So for everybody who thinks there are a bunch of retards who are just shooting rounds all over the place, that was good shooting. All right. Whether you like it or not, whether or not that, you know, the MSNBC told you that they don't know how to shoot, I totally happenstancely am wearing the artilleryman shirt today. It's not a coincidence. I was the guy that calculated intervening crest. All right. It is a serious problem for new guys. Back to combat experience matters. These dudes are doing stuff in a functional fashion that tells you that they have skill. And we just, well, but they didn't do something that they were never going to do. Okay. Yeah, of course they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't fight the way the Americans fight because they're not American. Oh, weird. Really?
Yeah. Wow. Shocking.
What?
Yeah.
Get out of here. What? You know. Oh, and they're also just mopping up the floor with a military that never fought any engagement ever since like World War II. So essentially never. Like no one living in the Ukrainian military has ever fought a military campaign.
Right.
Where at least with the Russians, you had like Syria, you had a few other military campaigns, you had Wagner, you had Afghanistan, like,
right.
You know, some fairly current issues, things going on in Crimea, things going on in Chechnya, things going on very shortly, very briefly in Georgia. Like, they have at least some OPSEC about how these things are going. And they have been, you know, at least some of their people have been actually involved in the shit.
Yeah.
And we can't ever discount the effect of Wagner, which was Wagner's a motherfucker, man. Like, they're essentially the French Foreign Legion, but Russian.
Well, I mean, they're sort of the Russian Blackwater.
Right. Yeah.
Not perfect, but close enough. And
I find all these terms, like, we can get into the minutia of like, oh, they're like this and like that, and they don't even recruit from. Okay. Yes. But effectively, they're the same thing. Like, there are a bunch of people that these countries go fuck that up and do it in a way that we don't necessarily have to be involved.
Yeah.
So
the internet loves to mock Blackwater, ironically, because of shit printed in MSNBC and the New York Times, right?
I personally wouldn't want to I wouldn't want to mock anything that Eric Prince is involved in. Right. I always say very nice things about Eric Prince publicly, even privately, because it just, you never know. I don't want to knock on the door.
In my wall.
Right. Fuck that, man. But that man scares me. Like, it's legit.
The thing is, like, as Blackwater grew way too fast, yes, they had some problems. But when Blackwater was young, it was probably the most dangerous thing on the planet, because it was all the stone cold killers that the U.S. military could produce with no rules of engagement. All right. Now, don't get me wrong. They didn't have artillery in the same sense, for sure. They didn't have certainly all of the air power of the U.S. military, but they didn't have any of this bullshit, you know, no politics involved. It was, this is the mission, go do it. And the thing that turned Blackwater's shit in the eyes of the public, you know, them laying waste to a whole town or whatever for no reason, right? Those guys are out of jail, have been pardoned, right? There is a whole series of podcasts on the Sean Ryan show, talking to those guys, talking to the reporter who spent 5 years of her life investigating what those guys were doing and what happened. Those guys got into a multidimensional ambush, which you're not supposed to live through, right? I mean, it just, L-shaped ambushes are good enough. That's two dimensions. These guys, it sounds a lot like we're in a five-dimensional ambush. You're supposed to just die. And these dudes not only didn't die, they fucking killed the enemy with no support, right? Effectively.
And the enemy was giant space bugs.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Brought it around, Don.
Exactly. Right.
Sorry. Finish your point.
No, that is a statistical no. That doesn't happen, right? So, you know, talk all the shit you want, but understand that when we're talking about Wagner, okay, you can come tell me they're not as good, and I'm happy to listen. You can come tell me that, you know, the pipe hitters of the U.S. military are the most dangerous fucking people in the world. I'm happy to hear it. On the other hand, what are we talking? Standard U.S. Marine infantryman who has no rules of engagement? Do you know what happens when the standard Marine infantry has no rules of engagement? Because I do. Right? People fucking die, and a lot of them. All right? They're dangerous people. And, you know, I shrugged them off because Wagner's a bunch of retards. Like, well, I'll tell you what. You go pick up a rifle and you show me how bunch of retards they actually are. Have at it. Go ahead.
Just to give an example, Wagner killed so many Ukrainians in Bakhmut that they actually exhausted themselves. They had to be switched out with like regular troops. By that point, they had already like killed so many Ukrainians in Bakhmut that they were like, oh, "Dude, I'm tired of killing these people. I need some R&R just to rest up my arms." It's tough doing this just repeatedly, man. Like, they keep just coming. And I just keep doing this. It's my trigger finger's tired. Like,
and you know, you can, I've seen people mock that premise, but man, by the time that dude in charge, Prince Eugen or whatever his name is, that was in charge of Wagner, is just standing in the middle of the street, like, Ukrainians, I'm pleading with you, stop making me kill you. Okay. You can tell me they're not dangerous people if you want, but is a pretty good sign for dangerous people.
If you go with what the Russians were saying and you go with what the Ukrainians were saying and try to find like some sort of middle ground, we're talking in the neighborhood of 50 to 100,000 dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, you got to sit with that number for a second. And your brain can't comprehend that number.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like when you're talking about 100 million dead during communism and your brain just goes,
yeah,
right.
It's
even 50,000 people dead in basically a few months.
Yeah,
you take the lowest number. That's crazy. Like, that should decimate an army. That's it. You're over. You're done. Like, you're finished. Like, you better get some new leadership. You got to figure something out. You better get an atomic bomb. Do a Ukrainian Manhattan Project or something.
Something better happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and You can listen to the Western press all you want. Ah, they were just killing women and children. Probably not. You know, it's come up a lot over the past, I don't know, year or so. Look, whether you like it or not, generally speaking, guys that do killing live in an honor culture, and they kind of have to. And guys that butcher women and children don't do well in that honor culture. It's just the truth.
You can't trust them.
Exactly.
If this guy, you mean, there can be accidental deaths, there can be casualties that are unfortunate, all that stuff, for sure, especially when you're doing bombing raids. But the Russians, since the very start, and again, I'm not throwing any, I'm Ukrainian, like, I'm of Ukrainian heritage, Ukrainian Polish, like, trust me, having to even do that Putin friend or Fed we did a few months ago, was that was hard. That was a hard one on the soul, right? To even listen to anything Putin saying, I'm like, well, I mean, where's the lie? Like, this is crazy for me to even be anywhere in the neighbor of agreement with Putin, but, and or even, you know, signaling against my own people in this case. Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, I said this from the very start and no one wanted to listen to me and everyone thought I was crazy, but I'm like, there is no winning. You're going to get a whole bunch of people killed. As a Ukrainian nationalist, I'm interested in you know, Ukrainian people not dying.
Yeah.
So take the deal. Yeah. Bakhmut and all these places are basically Russian centered areas anyways. Oh, these things aren't fair. They're manipulating. Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. Great. Yeah. Now you're going to lose Odessa. You're going to lose Odessa now. And when you lose Odessa, your country doesn't exist anymore. You're a microstate. Yeah. You're a suburb of fucking Poland. So get used to that idea. If he takes Kiev, what else do you do? Like, do you call Ukraine anymore? Like
this you, is that Ukraine now?
Yeah. Oh, so you're going to have some fertile fields to basically give over to BlackRock, who's already bought everything, by the way.
Yeah.
And you have Chernobyl. Good.
Yay.
Great. Yay.
Right.
Woo. Winning. Okay, Don, we're at the hour mark.
We should discuss what we came for.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're going to do here, because we are recording this, so I can put this out while I'm on vacation. I'm going to pause this here, but we're going to pretend like this is the end of the normal show, and then I'll pause it, and then I'll make the cut, and the rest of the stuff we're going to talk about will be over on the members only for a bit. It's $2 to sign up. It's literally the cheapest I can make it. It's a kind of a gatekeep, as well as, like, you know, I actually do get to pay some bills with it. So that's how sad my pathetic my life is, that $2 is a game changer. The other thing I always tell people is that, you know, money you send me through either super chats, thanks, rants, anything you can send over, money, people sign up on Patreon, on Substack and a few other places. I'll take a lot of money and put it out in subscriptions. So subscribe to Peter Cronona's, to Thomas 77, to a lot of the guests you hear on the show. Don, if you ever had something I can invest in, I invest in you as well, which we'll talk about in the after show. Yeah. Behind the paywall. $2, guys. Yes. I'm grifting and I'm just really bad at it. Or really good at it, maybe.
You're better than me. So.
Oh, I got $2. It's better than nothing. Dom, I know you're not really doing shows right now, but where can people find you in case they want to find you? And then
90% of what I do on the internet these days is on X, and it is at Hilo Procurement, all one word. It's labeled Gun Bunny at the moment, just because everywhere I was going on the internet for a little while, the only thing that ever was getting said to me is that I was a gun bunny. And there is a picture of a rabbit on a cannon. Yes, that's me. It does say Don Gun Bunny Workman, I think, or maybe Don the Pleb Workman, one of the two. But it just a joke about being an artilleryman. And before anybody asked, no, I wasn't actually a gun bunny. I was a fat dude chilling, but none of you know what that means. So gun bunny it is.
I don't do military speak, but it sounds sexy. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening and watching and subscribing and sharing and thumbs upping and doing all the things. We have been having massive growth in the channel, and it's down to every single one of you out there listening and supporting. I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart, and we will talk to you again very soon. Just hang on, Don.